following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 15th chapter, text number 69, given by Srila Rinasrup Das on July 8, 1992, in Philadelphia.
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 7, chapter 15, instructions for civilized human beings. This morning is text number 69. Long ago, in another Mahakalpa, millennium of Brahma, I existed as the Gandharva known as Upabarhana. I was very respected by the other Gandharvas. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Narad Muni is giving a practical example from his past life. Formerly, during the previous lifetime of Lord Brahma, Narad Muni was one of the denizens of Gandharva Loka. But unfortunately, as will be explained, he fell from his exalted position in Gandharva Loka, where the inhabitants are extremely beautiful and expert singing, to become a Shudra. Nonetheless, because of his association with devotees, he became more fortunate than he was in Gandharva Loka. Even though cursed by the Prajapatis to become a Shudra, in his next life he became the son of Lord Brahma. The word Mahakalpa is described by Srila Madhvacharya as Atita Brahmakalpa. Brahma dies at the end of a life of many millions of years. The day of Brahma is described in Bhagavad Gita 8:17. Sahasra yuga paryantam ahariyad brahmano viduhu ratrim yuga sahasrantam teho ratra vido janah. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together is the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. Bhagavan Sri Krishna can remember incidents from millions of years ago. Similarly, his pure devotee like Narad Muni can also remember incidences from a past life millions and millions of years ago. So the text again, long, long ago, in another Mahakalpa, millennium of Brahma, I existed as the Gandharva known as Upabarhana. I was very respected by the other Gandharvas. So here, as we sometimes do when we are preaching, we tell our own stories. Narada Muni is telling his story, how he became a devotee of Krishna. He's already told this story, actually, in some detail. It's recounted in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how he took birth as a son of a maidservant, as a Shudra, and how, even though he started out from that unfortunate position, he, by association of devotees, he became elevated. What we have here, now he goes back to explain how he got into that position originally as the Shudra. So we have here three lives, three lifetimes. Just as, for example, there's the story of Jet Bharata. We know we have his history, three lifetimes. How he was a king who had retired to the forest to meditate and was very advanced, but became attracted to a pet deer. And became attached to that deer. These are the dangers of pet ownership. an attachment to. And he became, each one of these, you see there was a beginning, there was a fall down, they were advanced and then they fell down. Here we see Narada Muni is a very advanced Gandharva, but he began to sing the equivalent of rock music instead of bhajans. That will be explained. I think Prabhupada calls it cinema songs. Actually, it was songs in praise of the devatas rather than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We see he was chanting and being surrounded by many admiring ladies, began to entertain them with less than fully spiritual music for their admiration, and so he was cursed. So he fell down for that. And so here Maharaj Bharata was a great king, but he became he saved, again, it was piety. There was an animal, a deer whose mother had fled in fear of a lion or tiger. And so he took the little orphaned or abandoned, what is it, a doe? Yeah. No, a fawn. That's right, that's the word, a fawn, baby deer, and took care of it. Became attached, very extremely attached, so much that he neglected his regular sadhana. And one day the fawn was not there, and he went searching for it and stumbled off the edge of a cliff and died with the image of the fawn in his mind. So he took his next birth as a deer. Who nevertheless, because of previous spiritual advancement, retained his human consciousness, so that the deer used to browse where sages were gathered and listen to their conversations. And then next life, final life, is Jed Bharata. He's, at that time, everyone thought he was autistic. He didn't communicate with anyone, kept completely to himself, ignored everything. So he was thought to be autistic or mentally retarded or something like that. But actually was completely absorbed in transcendence. That was his last birth. So three lives there. So here we have also from the great Narada Muni, our previous acharya in our disciplic succession. Three lives. First here as this Gandharva, he says here, what does he see? Yeah. Kaschit Gandharva Upabharana. I was in my previous existence a certain Gandharva of the name Upabharana. He says, Atite Mahakalpe. This was in another millennium of Brahma. This was in another millennium. So this was a long time ago. This was a long time ago. Here we, Brahmakalpe, the word Mahakalpe is glossed by Madhvacharya as Atita Brahmakalpe, that is to say, during the previous, during another Brahma. Or it also may be taken, as Prabhupada explains in here, as the previous day of Brahma. But in either case, was a long time ago. Okay, this is explained. Prabhupada quotes us, how long is he remembering? Well, Lord Brahma, it says here, lives 1,000 1,000 yugas. Right, that's what it says. 1,000 yuga cycles. What is this?
One day.
It doesn't live. That's a day of Brahma. Is 1,000 yuga cycles. 1,000 yuga cycles is 4.32 billion years. That's a day of Brahma. Within that, there's 1,000 cycles. So each yuga cycle is 4.32 million years. Right? I had a little sheet of paper with the mathematics on it so I could follow it. No, I can't. I thought I stuck it in this book. What I did with it. I did stick it in this book somewhere. So that's 4.32 million years. That cycle has a cycle of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Kali Yuga, and Dwarpa Yuga. That's a yuga cycle. Four of those, 4.32 million years. Yeah. We're talking about solar years. That's called a kalpa or a day of Brahma. No, excuse me. A kalpa is a day of Brahma, made up of thousands of these yuga cycles. And then each of those has these four ages. It's interesting the way it works. Satya Yuga is 4/10. Each age is longer. Satya Yuga is 4/10 of the yuga cycle. That is of 4.32 billion years, million years, 4.32 billion years. So Satya Yuga is 4/10, Dwarpa Yuga 3/10, Treta Yuga 2/10, Kali Yuga 1/10. That's why Kali Yuga is 432,000 years. It is 1/10. So the length of the whole cycle, Satya Yuga is the longest, takes up 4/10, then Treta Yuga 3/10, Dwarpa Yuga 2/10, Kali Yuga 1/10. They go like that. Sometimes these calculations are given in, by the way, in Divya years, not solar years. Divya year means a year of the demigod, which is 360 solar years. Every time one year passes down here, 360 years pass down here, one year passes up in the higher planets. So in Divya Yugas, one full yuga cycle is 12,000 years. That's why, like a lot of times, I have read textbooks on Hinduism, which says that Kali Yuga is 1,200 years long. And people still think that, but they get it from the Puranas, which is given in Divya Yugas. You have to multiply that by 360 to get the actual length. So somebody, sometimes when you're preaching, you'll run into people that will say, "Oh, Kali Yuga is only 1,200 years long," and devotees get confused. No, it's 432,000 years. That's because their 1,200 years is given in demigod. It is 1,200 years of the demigods, which is 432,000 of our years, multiplied by 360. That's what you have to do. So this is a long history, which goes on these cycles. History, according to here, is moving in cycles, like spring, summer, autumn, winter, spring, summer, autumn, winter. This year's one day of Brahma made up of 1,000 yuga cycles. Actually, if you want to know the technically correct thing, there's not actually 1,000 yuga cycles. See, 1,000 yugas, Krishna says, compromises my Brahma's one day. Well, there's the period of time of 1,000 cycles. Actually, there's 994 cycles, plus a resting period between the cycles, which is called a sandhya. Sandhya means transition. Like sandhya, there's three sandhyas during our day. The morning sandhya at sunrise, noon sandhya, the transition from morning to afternoon, that's called a sandhya. And sunset is also called a sandhya. And when we chant in the morning, yes, yes, tri sandhya, the last verse of the Guru Vastakam prayers, Dayam stuvam yas yas tri sandhya. I'll offer my obeisances to my guru, my respects to my guru. Tri sandhya, three times a day. That three times a day means sunrise, noon, and sunset. When Gayatri mantra is chanted, the guru is worshipped when the Gayatri mantra is chanted. So three times a day. Those are sandhyas. So similarly, there's sandhya between each yuga, complete yuga cycle, which is the sandhya is the equivalent period of time of one satya yuga. And so you get six yuga cycles, or if you multiply them out, you get six yuga cycles are spent wasted in sannyas. So, you know, this.
Well, between each divya,
there's a sannya. Yeah, there's, between each divya yuga, there's a sannya. Each complete cycle. So there's 994 divya yugas or yuga cycles. Really. So sometimes you see there's a little more detail than what you get in Bhagavad Gita. He just says 1,000 yugas compromise my one day. But it's actually 994 yuga cycles plus 6 plus 15 sanjas. That's what it is.
And that's just one day?
Yeah, that's just one day. Then there's a night of the equivalent length of time, which is characterized by a partial devastation of the universe, and Brahma goes to sleep. He partially goes back into the Vishnu of to the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Everything is dormant. Everybody's karma is suspended, just like everyone's sleeping. You know, just, and then Brahma wakes up. Devritas, everybody gets going again. Right.
And there's 365 days in the 110 years.
Yeah, we have, this is the day of Brahma. This is the day of Brahma. So the lifetime of Brahma is this 4.32 billion years. This is the lifetime of Brahma in solar years, 4.32 billion years, times 30, no, times 2, because a day and a night. Then a month, 30 days, times 30. Then times 12, for the number of months in a year, and then he lives 100 years times 100. That's how long Brahma lives.
Do you recall roughly like the billions, trillions,
five? I don't know. So what does it multiply down?
811 trillion 40 million
solar years is the lifetime of Brahma. Let me write that down. I don't have that down here.
It's like for every dollar that exists on planet Earth, he gets 40 years.
811 trillion? 40 million?
Probably gets that figure.
Yeah, I never multiplied it out, you know. So that's what's going on. Then, of course, you see, That lifetime of Brahma is one exhalation period of Mahavishnu. What happens at the end of Brahma's life is that the universe is absorbed back into Mahavishnu. He breathes out and the universes come out and their seedling forms. They grow and develop. The universe exists as long as Brahma, who's like the soul of the universe. And Krishna is the super soul of the universe, so Brahma is the individual soul of the universe. Just as in this body there's a soul and a super soul. So in this universe there's Brahma and there's Krishna. So the universe, in one extent, is like the body of Brahma. So it lasts his lifetime. So that lifetime is while Mahavishnu, he exhales. And then when he inhales, everything is gone for the similar length of time, 811 trillion 40 million years. Then he exhales again, and everything creation, new Brahmas come out, everything goes out again. And so far as anyone knows, it just keeps on going. It's the only report we have that Mahavishnu just keeps on. He's in yoga nidra, kind of trance. And one way it's described is these universes come out. Another way it's described in different ways is that it's all his dream. It's all like a dream of Mahavishnu. But Prabhupada says somewhere, his dream is our reality. So things are going on an incredible cosmic scale. It's supposedly a new discovery of the human race, you know, when modern astronomers begin to work in these gigantic numbers. But the gigantic numbers have been understood for a long time by the in the Vedas, these huge, vast, illimitable expanses of time. And Prabhupada says that a soul may go into the material world, fall down from the spiritual world, and go back again. And you may be down in this material world, just like we see with Narada Muni. We have three lifetimes which span, you know, a couple of lifetimes of Brahma, or at least a couple of Divya Yugas of Brahma. And still, so you can be down here in the material world for the lifetimes of many, many Brahmas. Because when you get absorbed again in the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu or Mahavishnu, your karma goes with you. You're not liberated. You're just suspended animation. It's not in a liberated state. It says that when the universe is recreated after the new day of Brahma, when that lotus flower sprouts, comes out of the navel of Vishnu, which has the universe packed in it, it's bluish because the blue is like the collective karma of the living entities. It's there in the subtle form, and it gives it a bluish cast. It says like that. The description is there in Bhagavatam. So anyway, during those latent periods or sleeping periods or non-manifesting periods, the conditioned souls are still conditioned by their karma. They're just suspended for a while. So anyway, all that huge length of time that a conditioned soul may be in the material world, cycle after cycle after cycle, if one returns to the spiritual world, it says if he were gone for the blink of an eye, all that huge amount of time, nothing is passed in the spiritual world. There's no passage of time at all. As you can see here, even here, there's a kind of time dilation that in the heavenly planets, 1 year passes there, 360 years pass here, So that means if you're on a higher planet and you look down on their earthly planet, everybody's going, civilizations are rising and falling. You know, it's like a speeded up film. So the notion is, for example, so you have this much time here is that much time there. So just follow the triangle back when you hit the spiritual world. It comes to a point where it's like just a kind of eternal now, so that you may be here on the higher and lower planets billions and trillions of years, and then if you go back to the spiritual world, it's like you never left. It is not, of course, incomprehensible in some ways to our present experience, but there is this effect of time dilation that takes place when you go up. So temporal relativity is also not a new discovery either. Anyway, get back to the story. Narada Muni says that in a previous Brahma, that he was a certain Gandharva named Upabarhana, and he was highly respected. He was one of the heads. Gandharvas, there is a Gandharva Loka. There is one of the higher planets is the Gandharva planet, where their expertise is singing, dancing, dramatic arts and so on like that. This is the Gandharvas. And they're very powerful beings. Mahabharata has stories about Gandharvas on earth, where they tend to be very, very powerful. In fact, have superhuman strength and so on, and mystic powers. In Europe, there's a whole body of literature of lore about what's called fairies. Everybody gets their idea of a fairy from Walt Disney and Tinkerbell. But the actual original fairy tales in European tradition speak of beings that greatly resemble the description we have in the Vedic literature of Gandharvas in many respects. That's a whole other thing. There are many kinds of what we would call supernatural beings. They're not supernatural, but they come from places in nature we're not aware of, like these Gandharvas, and they come to earth and they do so many things, a little frightening people. But they have their own place, this Gandharva Loka. And so there was Narada Muni. That's a heavenly planet. It's a heavenly planet. And here he will tell how it was that he he fell down to this lower status as Shudra. And then in Bhagavatam, he describes that episode in the context of explaining to Vyasadeva the power of devotional service. Narada Muni says, I was a Shudra, the son of a maidservant. And for a certain period of time, he said, I was engaged in the devotional service of Mahabhagavatas. This was during the Chaturmasya period, the 4 months of the rainy season. I think it's about to begin. Not rainy season over here, but it is in India. And during that time, travel was not possible anymore. So the sages who used to travel would have to hole up for 4 months, because roads were impassable and conditions were too difficult to travel, and too dangerous also because of the rains. And so during that 4 months of Chaturmasya, they would stay in one place and follow strict rules and regulations. So he describes how he was born as a maidservant. So during the 4 months of Chaturmasya, some great Mahabhagavata devotees were staying in a shelter, some kind of cave or something. And they engaged this serving woman to clean up and so on, do a few menial chores. And she took her little boy along with him. It means that he didn't have a father, or his father was unknown. In other words, he was not a legitimate child. So he was born all these kind of inauspicious conditions for spiritual realization. And yet, because of his brief association with these Mahabhagavatas, he became extraordinarily advanced in devotional service. Not enough to completely become liberated, well, not enough in this lifetime to attain a full destination, but so that finally, at the end of the life, he was completely free from material desire. And so he took his next birth and the new day of Brahma as the son of Brahma, as Narada Muni. So then you have the third lifetime, his lifetime as Narada Muni, Prabhupada calls the eternal spaceman. He's a very popular figure. The first book I had in Krishna consciousness was had Narada Muni on the cover. In fact, I used to own one of my first ISKCON artifacts I ever got was a Narada Muni blacklight poster. I don't know if those are during the 60s. One thing that people like were these fluorescent posters. You put a black light. It's called a black light. I don't know, some kind of light. It was ultraviolet light. Yeah, you put ultraviolet lights in the room and it had these psychedelic posters all over the wall. And you'd turn off your regular lights and at night turn on the ultraviolet light and these posters would pulse and glow, you know, and they had, you know, mandalas and symbols and Escher paintings and all this psychedelic stuff. So one of the things that the posters the devotees had was a blacklight poster, a painting, a picture of Narada Muni. It was like a line drawing of Narada Muni with a Hare Krishna mantra all around the border like this that people had on their walls along, and because he was the eternal spaceman, people took space because people thought of LSD as a kind of space travel also. and so that was his. He was a very popular figure, the eternal spaceman. Prabhupada says, wandering from planet to planet through the spaceways, chanting Hare Krishna, and playing his veena like that. So he was very popular among the early devotees of ISKCON. Well, I had it. I had this black light poster. It's gone. I don't know what happened to it. Of Narada Muni. So he's the archetypical example of somebody who, by good association, by the power of devotional service, attains a very high state of Krishna consciousness. So it says, he was in Gandharva Loka and became cursed by the Prajapatis to be a Shudra, but Prabhupada says, nonetheless, because of his association with devotees, he became more fortunate than he was in Gandharva Loka. So it's a question of what's good fortune or not. You may say that Gandharva Loka is the best place to be, and here it looked like a disaster to take this horrible birth, but it wasn't a disaster at all. Even though cursed by the Prajapatis to become a Shudra, in his next life he became the son of Lord Brahma. And not only the son of Lord Brahma, but especially His empowered incarnation of Krishna, Narada Muni, endowed with the different Shaktyavesh avatar, are sometimes endowed with different particular potencies of Krishna. So Narada Muni is endowed with Bhakti Shakti, the potency of devotional service. On another occasion, and he travels, Prabhupada was quite adamant about the reality of Narada Muni and present reality of Narada Muni. So at one time, the devotees in Boston, because Prabhupada was coming, this was very early, I guess Satsarup was at that time the president of Boston, so Prabhupada was coming. Sometime, I don't know, 67 or something like that. It wasn't yet at all much of a famous reputation. The devotees were scrambling like crazy to keep the movement going. But because Prabhupada was coming, they engaged an entire church for Prabhupada to give a lecture in. It went all over Boston, passing out notices, the posters and everything that Prabhupada was coming. So this was a big thing for the devotees, and they brought Prabhupada to the church, and it was practically empty. They had a vast place that could hold, you know, 500 people, and there were maybe 20 people in the front row. Undaunted, Prabhupada had a nice kirtan, and then gave what was described to me as a brilliant lecture on the transformation of matter into spirit. You know, for a sorted odd 20 people, some of whom were just street people who came inside, you know, just didn't faze him. He gave this brilliant lecture. Devotees were amazed that Prabhupada, you know, took such care to give such an incredible lecture, and just went through the whole program. So they said to Prabhupada, they were profusely apologetic to Prabhupada, and they were amazed. Prabhupada, you gave such a wonderful lecture, and nobody was there. We're so sorry, nobody came. Prabhupada said, oh, Narada Muni was there. Did you say Narada Muni? That's what he said. So sometimes you don't know who's listening. So always do a good job. Even if it looks like nobody is there. Anyway, any questions? Yes?
You mentioned something about during Brahma's state when he's sleeping, mm-hmm. and the conditioned souls that they just kind of wander. What happened?
No, not wander, like sleep. They're wound up again within the body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. Brahma and the souls, they go back into the lotus, and they rest within the body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, which is the bottom of the universe. And then when he wakes up again there's a recreation that takes place. The lotus flower comes out, opens up, and so on. That's what happens.
So those souls, they don't actually have bodies?
They have subtle bodies. That's what they're. They don't have gross bodies, but they have subtle bodies. But there's data compression. You can do that. You can do that with your computer. You can take a file and the programs that squeeze them down and compress all the data, get rid of the empty spaces, and really, you know, it's a whole science. Message compression. You know, they learn how to compress mess. So there's a lot of compression. The subtle bodies are there, but everything's compressed. But it's all there. And then you just add water and serve. You know. They're expanded again. The subtle bodies are expanded, and their karma's there. They get the thing. So they
have to stay in that way until
they have to. They stay that way in that sleep, a kind of conditioned sleep, until again Brahma is reawoken and their karma is reactivated. They have not made any spiritual progress. They've not gone up. They've not gone down. We've not gone up. We've not gone down. So it's not actually very pleasant. Bhutva bhutva praliyate, Krishna describes it in Bhagavad Gita. Again and again, this whole world is manifest. Again and again, the curtain falls, and it's dormant. And then again, it starts up again. Everybody runs around like crazy, like chickens. But their heads caught up, blah, 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 doing this, that, the other thing, busy, 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 making progress, you know, going up, going down. And then the whole thing is just compacted, shut down for a while. Then again, it's nonsense. The whole thing is a waste of time. It's futile. It's futility. No, you want to get out of this creation and destruction, creation and destruction, creation and destruction. Because it serves no useful purpose. There is no progress. There is no progress. Everybody's grown up to believe in progress. There is no progress. Progress means progress out of this business. Within this business, this is what goes up. It's a whole bit of, you know, big deal. Newspapers are published, books are written, all this thing. Then every clothing closes down again. Boom and bust, boom and bust, boom and bust. That's the cycle. Yeah, yeah.
So, that means while Brahma tonight, I mean, they are completely unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no fear of life at all.
Yeah, that's right.
And so when it dies too, for this long time that you live, there's no fear of life, no nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Long, long time. You start thinking about those time spans. You just start to try to imagine how long it is. It takes your breath away. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you answered that in her question, but I was curious, you know, because people think of death as annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
People are in this, is it a yogic sleep, would you call it?
No, they're not in yogic sleep. They're just knocked out.
Knocked out? There's no consciousness at all?
So far as it's very, very small, you know. You certainly can't remember it. In the state of deep, deep sleep, there's some kind of consciousness, but there are not even mental life. So far as I know, there's not even dreaming.
Maybe that's where the
theory of
death comes from.
Anyway, it's pretty, you're not annihilated, but it's pretty down. You're shut down for a while, unplugged. There's no material energy to activate your desires. Yeah.
You see that in the previous stages, it was so often that the demigods like Narada and Muni, they would descend.
Mm-hmm.
Very, like, now they would descend down on the earth and damage.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that in this age of Kali, and even the demigods are aspiring to take birth, they don't descend anymore?
Yeah, they aspire to take birth because of the Sankirtan movement, and they can make spiritual progress. Otherwise, they used to come as tourists. They would come to enjoy, not to make spiritual progress. They were just like, you know, people used to go to, you know, various places where people were a little primitive but still interesting, so they go as tourists. Maybe even they went as anthropologists, I don't know, but at least as tourists they would go. But then after, you know, after the tribal people have been corrupted and they all wearing dacron shirts anyway, nobody, not even the tourists go anymore. So the demigods, they stay away. There's no fun here. You know, it's all like a slum. The tourists, they don't go to Camden. Now there's an aquarium there. Maybe they're trying to lure them back. But normally they don't go to Camden, New Jersey. And if the tourists come to Philadelphia, only certain parts. There are no tourists at 10th and Wallace or, you know, North Philadelphia. that's where they stay away, you know. It just gets, there's a story, you know, a great Philadelphia story. Why the people sometimes, you know, they just, it's too dangerous. There's a, sometimes in Philadelphia, big festivals down on the parkway, people went up in hot air balloons, you know, these big balloons you see, decorated. So they all went up. So the wind changed. So one fellow in his balloon, it had some defect or something. It came down and lost. It just got held up. So people don't come. So the same way the demigods, they don't descend. Not that they're in any danger, but it's certainly no fun. So they don't come here anymore. Because people are not performing sacrifice, they're not attractive to come. It says actually when Lord Buddha stopped sacrifice, then they were not appearing. Even when they come, it says, for example, when Maharaj Yudhisthira performed sacrifice, even the ordinary person could see the demigods. So a lot of times even ordinary people can't see them, but they became visible to ordinary people. How can you tell a demigod? Three things. Their eyes don't blink, their feet are always a little bit off the ground, and their garlands do not wither. Yeah, so they'll come back again. And if it's really nice, even the ordinary people cannot see them. When Prabhupada was in Philadelphia, right after the Ratha Yatra, there was a Ratha Yatra here in 65 that Prabhupada came. And there was a reporter from the Philadelphia Inquirer to do an article on this. And they did a whole page magazine. But this reporter was a very critical person. And when she had an interview with Prabhupada, the first thing she said to him is,